Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, today my guest is Dr. Sally Broder. She is the executive director for the organization Horse Sensing. Their mission is to help veterans transition back to civilian life more successfully through being with horses. Now, welcome to the show, Sally. I'm sure there's a whole lot more to it than what I just said there. So why don't you tell us more about yourself and your background and everything that you do?
Hi, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you very much. You started it off very well. So, you know, what we're trying to do is help veterans be able to transition successfully. And the way that we do that is we have two different things that we offer for veterans. Two basic things. One is we do these day-long equine therapy programs, and those are what we've been doing for about 10 years or 11 years now. And we start off traditionally with yoga in the morning, and then we go from yoga to working with horses. Of course, we have food in there, and then we have you know, some process groups around it. So it's like a real therapeutic day. So we do the day long things. And then the other thing that we do that we came out here to Kentucky to do primarily is this program where it's called HS Grooming Education Certification and Job Placement Program. And so what we do is we have this structured program where we teach vets everything they need to know to work with horses professionally. And then, you know, at the same time, we're addressing the common things that people have, post-combat issues, right? So post-combat issues would be what everybody thinks of as PTS, right? PTSD, post-traumatic stress. But that really is like anxiety, depression, a lot of times substance abuse. So we address all that stuff, but we also teach them this trade, and we have three different tracks for it right now. I'm hoping to get some more, but it's show horses, thoroughbred race horses, and harness race horses. And so we can teach people how to do that. And then we place them in a job that has housing. And so that what we're trying to do there is address a few different things. We're addressing substance abuse. We're addressing their mental health stuff, suicidality, employment, and housing at once. Mm-hmm. And so that's a long-winded answer.
Yeah, so it seems like you have quite a bit going on with all that, and it's like you said, it's addressing a number of different issues that veterans face. You know, a lot of those types of things are very common, and you know, I think especially with the job placement, you know, the job training, and then, you know, placing people in these jobs afterwards, it addresses something that I don't think you necessarily specifically said, but you know, it gives people a sense of purpose. And that's one of those things that transitioning veterans have an issue with a lot of times, is that they identified as a soldier, as a Marine, as an airman, sailor, whatever they happen to be. And then all of a sudden one day they take the uniform off, and now they're no longer that thing anymore. And now they're struggling to figure out who am I and what am I doing? And so when they struggle with finding a job that is meaningful for them, they just don't know really what it is that they are and what their purpose is. You know, being in the military has a there's a big purpose there. You know, you're serving your country, you're protecting, you know, your country, and you're fighting in wars or not. You know, you may be doing stuff, you know, not in a combat role, but still, it's all part of the service to your country. And you know, that there's a big sense of purpose there. When you get out, you're struggling a lot of times to find that. And so getting this type of training and this type of employment gives you a little bit of a more of a sense of purpose than you might've had without that.
Would you say virtually any MOS feels important?
I think, well, this is going to be kind of a little tongue in cheek, but it's, I think they all feel important to themselves, you know, like when you're in that role, you know, if you're in finance, for example, and you're responsible for handling soldiers' pay, you feel important about that, because without you doing the job that you're doing, the soldiers aren't getting paid, and that's an issue. But then on the other side, as the soldier getting paid, when my pay is screwed up, I think that those people, you know, maybe aren't really, you know, as competent as they may think they are sometimes. And it that's tongue in cheek, because it's, you know, there's a whole series of issues that could go into all of that stuff. And many times it's probably not even their fault that, you know, the pay got messed up or anything. So, but yeah, I think everyone does think that their job is important, you know, to some extent. I mean, even, you know, no matter what you're doing, if you're a cook, you're providing the food that the soldiers who are fighting the wars are relying on to be able to go, you know, have the energy to go do what they're doing. If you're in supply and logistics, you know, if the weapons and the ammunition and things like that can't get to the battlefield, then there's no way you're going to fight the battle very effectively. So there's a lot of different jobs, and they all are important in one way or another. They all fit together in the big overall puzzle.
Yeah, so then you get back stateside after leaving combat, and it's like, now what am I going to do? Yeah. And now, you know, my wife, I'm being stereotypical now, my wife has been making all the money. She's been raising the kids, and she's, you know, she's the one that's in charge of the house, and I don't have anything. You know, what is my point? What, you know, and that's a breeding ground for depression, right? It's a breeding ground for having a few too many beers every night, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just tell you a little like personal story. Is so the way I got into horses really seriously, and it's on my website too, is, you know, I used to use drugs at one time because I was raised in a family that did all that. And I went to work with horses, and I got to, one example is I got to jog this amazingly beautiful horse in the morning and have the sun come up, right? And this is a world champion horse. And that was one of the things that my skill level got to the point where I could sit in a cart and exercise them. And that was, you know, part of my job. And I really did have a sense of purpose. I felt like, oh my God, I'm really good at this. Mm-hmm. And the horses look forward to me coming. And, you know, my boss relies on me to make sure that everything's done just right, so that these horses are well taken care of and we can take them to shows and they're going to win. You know, so I know that that's something that the veterans can feel as well. And, you know, one of the ways that we got the idea for doing this full-time program is that, you know, being in California and doing this since 2010, or I started in 2009, is that I had all these frequent flyers. I kept having these repeat people. I'm like, why do you keep coming back? We're doing pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
It's because they liked, getting better at it. They liked building the skills. They loved being with the horses, and they loved the way they felt when they were with the horses. And I was like, man, you know, what if we really took it to the next level so they really could get employed, mm-hmm. you know, because I knew what that was like being employed in the horse business. And you get those things, you get a sense of hope that things are going to be better tomorrow, mm-hmm. you know, a sense of purpose, like me being here matters to this barn. Right. Which is what, you know, when you get employed in the horse business, you belong to a barn, you're part of the barn family, you know, and this sense of belonging, just like the camaraderie in the military, which mm-hmm. is another thing that they lose when they come back, you know, the barn family and your routine working with horses does create a camaraderie as well.
Right. And I think that you touch on a good point there, that the camaraderie is something that, you know, you don't realize that you'll miss it until you don't have it. And when people are getting out of the military, they had that camaraderie for so long, you know, however long they were in the military, and they were with a group of people that they relied on, that they trusted, you know, in most cases.
I understood
and,
them.
And they understood. Yeah, they spoke the same language. They you know, shared experiences, you know, good and bad, and they were able to, you know, laugh and joke and just talk with each other and understand each other where they're coming from. And then when you get out of the military, I was talking to another veteran the other day, and he said, when he got out of the military, he was hanging out with some of his pre-military friends, like people he went to school with and things like that. And he said, it was like we're talking two completely different languages, and you know, we grew up together, we knew each other, and you know, we just were not the same people anymore. And he said he realized that he had changed through his experience in the military, and so he was venturing to, you know, work on a way to bridge that gap between the civilian and military understanding, and so you know,
be people, very useful.
Yeah, people do. Get the that camaraderie in the military, but then they lose it, and then they're wanting it, but they don't know where to find it. And so this is good that it's almost like a family, you know, like you're talking about, where you are responsible for things, people are relying on you to take care of certain things, and at the end of the day, the horses are relying on you too, because if they're not being taken care of, I mean, that's how they eat and how they exercise and how, you know, all that stuff is they're sort of relying on that too. And a lot of veterans probably like animals better than most people. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so that's another way to, you know, encourage that sense of camaraderie, even if it's a sense of purpose and belonging with a horse, you know, that they now have that purpose and belonging. So
that's part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about, you know, some of the situations that this type of therapy benefits, you know, between the post-traumatic stress, the substance abuse, and I mean, really, at the end of the day, it's homelessness too. If you're, you know, providing housing, you know, there's a lot of things like that. But what are there other like mental health conditions that this equine assisted therapy works well for? Is it kind of a one size fits all kind of thing, or is it you know, something that it's specifically geared towards certain types of conditions?
Well, okay, so. When you think, okay, going back to what most people think of when you think of PTSD, right? Or when you think of post-combat, there are a lot of different things that go along with it. Another one is ADHD.
Okay.
Okay, so what happens when people have that post-traumatic stress? Think about the hypervigilance that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, hypervigilance, right? So always having to watch your back all the time. ADHD parallels that also.
Okay.
So it's this thing of not being able to fully relax into the moment, you know, and it's drilled into you when you're trained, right? Mm-hmm. In the military, you have to be watching everything at once. You have to have this high sensory perception about your surroundings. And so that translates in a positive way with animals and with horses, and I'll tell you why. Since horses are prey animals, they're the same way, right? They're always like, because they have to be on high alert. So let's say that I have a veteran that is with a horse, and now this veteran takes ownership of this horse, so to speak. Now he's the one that is aware of everything going on. And so now that horse can relax.
Right? It feels comfortable around.
Yeah. And so that horse can relax knowing that they've got a leader, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we talk about is being a good leader to your horse, right? And we also talk about being a good leader to the horse inside of you.
Okay.
And that might sound a little corny, but it's like, you know, how do you want to treat yourself? How do you want to treat the horse inside of you? Well, so we're teaching them to be consistent and making them feel safe, consistency, also gentleness, but also firmness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these little subtleties. And we're also having them really get in touch with their own body and their own body language, and learning about the horse's body language. So all those things are kind of going into it, partially for safety, partially for therapeutic reasons, you know, for them to learn how to relax themselves, because all the things really related to post-combat have to do with stress, high stress, you know, all those things that you can think of, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, all that stuff kind of relates from this high stress. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is teach them how to self-regulate. You've probably heard that term before, self-regulating. Sure. It's a good psychological term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, that's what else? All those things that are under that.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Grief.
Oh yeah. And grieving is, definitely something that the, veterans, combat veterans will a lot of times have to experience, unfortunately, through, loss of a friend or something in combat, or even just grieving the loss of that identity that we were talking about before. That's another, people don't maybe recognize that as a grief, but you're no longer this person that you once were. And so there's a bit of grief there, as well. So, let's talk a little bit about the substance abuse and the addictions, side of things. When you reached out to me, a couple of weeks ago, to be on the show, told me a little bit about what you do. And you mentioned that this type of therapy helps provide veterans who are in recovery from these addictions with a solid path to staying clean and sober through working with these horses. What is it about being with the horses specifically that helps them find that path to staying clean? Like there's one side of it with just getting clean, but then staying that way for the long haul is, right. I think, the more important aspect of it. I mean, obviously baby steps, you have to start off getting there first, and then ultimate goal is staying clean for the long haul. So what is it about with the horses that helps with that?
Well, specifically with our program, because all of us are addiction experts, really. So what we're doing is we're providing a space that is specializing in relapse prevention ourselves. And so we're going to have 12-step meetings for them. And we have ongoing support for them. We have random drug testing too, providing them with a foundation to have a really good foundation in recovery. But also, you know, making sure that wherever it is that they get placed, that that's still a priority. So for example, you know, I got into recovery and I got my, you know, long lasting job way back in long time ago. And if I was out of town at a horse show, because we would sometimes be on the road for 12 days at a time, you know, gone to horse shows. In my downtime, I could look up a horse show. I mean, not a horse show. I could look up a 12-step meeting. So we had a horse show in Seattle, you know, I could find a local meeting there. And so what we do is we teach people the tools for the long haul, you know, how you're going to maintain it and how, and even right here in Kentucky at the World Championship Horse Show, they have a Bill W. room at the World Championship Horse Show. And what that is a place where they have ongoing 12-step meetings during the World Championship Horse Show, because they know that, you know, substance abuse is a problem, right?
Yeah, sure. No, that makes sense. You know, I didn't realize that was something that is so, you know, widespread and, you know, throughout that community where they would have, you know, kind of dedicated area for that at a show. But that's good that they do, and that they've recognized this as a, a legitimate way of, you know, coping and dealing with this type of stuff. So,
another way is, like, let's say I place someone in a barn, with a particular trainer. At the onboarding, we're telling them everything about this person, and this person is completely upfront about whatever they deal with, right?
Yep.
Let's say the person, you know, hyperventilates occasionally or has like panic attacks, you know, talking about that stuff up front so that the trainer can know how to help them, right? Know how to help them to be the best employee.
Right.
And same with substance abuse. You know, I'm sober, I'm in recovery, and I'm going to stay that way, but I want to let you know that that's something that I want to maintain. So if you can help me, you know, have an hour to go to a meeting at the, on the road, that would be helpful. You know, instead of the boss being like, hey, why are you disappearing for, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's more to it than just, you know, the disappearing act that might be, you know, on the surface, you know, there's something behind that. Yeah. And so, you know, these individual sessions that you do, are great, and they're probably very beneficial. Like you were saying, like, you know, when you first started this, you were getting a lot of, you called it, I think, frequent flyers that were coming through. And, but ultimately the goal is to change lives and work on the problems that people are having for the long haul, which is, you know, why I wanted to talk about that, you know, especially with regards to substance abuse and that type of stuff, because I think, you know, a lot of times it's the environment that people are in that enables the use of, you know, whether it's, you know, drugs or alcohol or whatever, it sort of encourages it, because, you know, maybe the friends. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The friends that you're hanging out with are, you know, always drinking. Well, then you're going to always drink because that's just what you're doing. You know, I actually heard, this is a while ago that I heard about this, but, there was, you know, obvious drug problems with, the soldiers who were in Vietnam. There were, you know, all sorts of different drugs that they were exposed to over there in Vietnam, and they were using these drugs. And a lot of the medical professionals back then said, you know, that, I mean, once when you're hooked on some of these drugs, you're that's it, you're hooked, and you're it's going to be very hard for you to get off of them. But what they were finding is when a lot of these soldiers were coming back to their hometowns where they didn't have friends or other people who were readily doing these types of drugs, they found that they were kicking the habit much easier than they thought that they would have. And so a lot of times it's just that change of environment that sometimes people need, you know? So And it seems like, you know, going to these different horse shows and, you know, different, you know, places where they're working with the horses is definitely a change of environment. And if it's a drug-free environment where that's not, you know, something that people do, they don't hang out and, you know, do drugs or drink all the time and things like that, then they're going to be less likely to fall back into those old habits, you know?
Absolutely. Plus they're working their butt off.
Right. And they're probably just too tired to do anything else, you know? So, yeah. So what's the process look like from, you know, so let's say, you know, there's a veteran who, is like, you know what, this sounds like something that would be good for me. You know, I want to reach out and I want to find out more about this. I want to get involved. What was the process look like from the, you know, the time that they're hearing this message right now on the, yeah, on the podcast to, you know, the time that they reach out to you and throughout the process, what does that all look like?
Well, they can email me at info@horsesensing.com, and we're switching everything over to .org, but for now it's .com, or they can call me at my number 650-776-4313. Then we can talk about whether they need housing. So we will have housing available. That'll be by the, let's say, mid-August is when it's looking like it'll be. Then for them, if they have absolutely no experience with horses, it's going to be probably 3 months of them, let's say, living on site here, mm-hmm, and getting trained. And so the way that it looks once they're here is, we start in the morning about 8 o'clock, and they're going to be doing this instruction and working at least till noon. Then if they wanted to have an actual job, you know, we would like encourage them to have a job in the afternoon if they needed to make money. But if they don't need to do that, then we'll be, you know, giving them other stuff that they can learn about, like other farm things, stable things.
Okay.
Then what we do is we take them to horse shows and we take them to the track. And we actually have them work in these environments. We have show horses that we take to shows, you know, so they can actually be doing this stuff. And when they reach a point where they're good enough, where we feel like they're good enough to kind of have venture out, we encourage them to do an internship. And we have barns here in Kentucky where they can do an internship where they work for another trainer, for a trainer to get specialized. Okay. And every single barn, every single trainer is, they do things different. Like in any business, they all have their little special ways of doing things. That can finish off their education. And if that trainer wants to hire them, they can negotiate and hire them, you know, with our help, of course, to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of, right?
Right, right.
If something, let's say that we place them in a job and it's not a good fit for them and they're like, I hate it here, then we'll get them something else.
Okay.
So we make sure that we'll follow along with them until they're completely, you know, situated and really forever, you know.
Right. Well, that's good that there's someone who kind of has their back there and is looking out for them, because, you know, if this is a new world to them, they don't know necessarily, you know, whether or not they're getting taken advantage of or, you know, whatever, like you're saying. So, you know, you're more familiar and your people are more familiar with that. And so they should be able to help out with that. So that makes sense. Now, this isn't something that is just specifically for veterans. You know, there's all sorts of people who can benefit from this type of thing, but I want to talk about the families of the service members and veterans as well as, you know, potential, you know, seeing some benefit from this. Now, there's issues with veterans coming out of combat, you know, the post-traumatic stress and all that kind of stuff too. But that type of stuff takes its toll on the families too, on the spouses and the children and all that type of stuff too. So what does that look like for the families, and what type of issues, you know, that the family members are dealing with, you know, when they come through this, what are some of the things that, you know, basically is like the, you know, the ideal, family member that might be coming through in terms of like how, like what they're dealing with and what they're going through that can help them out?
Well, let's imagine that, we're talking about a vet that's having transition problems. They have high anxiety. Maybe they're drinking too much. They're taking it out on the family. They're not employed. They're bummed about that. Mm-hmm. You know, getting them into this program is going to make them feel a whole lot better at the end of every day. And they're going to come home and they're going to want to like talk about it. Like they're going to be excited about it. And they're going to be a lot more enjoyable to be around.
Okay. Yeah, right. No, that does make sense too. Yeah. Is there opportunities for, you know, for example, like the spouses to come through your program as well for, you know, they're probably dealing with some issues as well. Like, you know, I think that's maybe, you know, kind of what I was getting at there.
Oh, well, so let's say that you had a spouse of the veteran that wanted to come out and experience the horse stuff, and their veteran was going through the grooming program. We have day-long things like this weekend. Tomorrow we have an event for female veterans, but it's also for spouses too.
Okay. Right? Like,
and so they could come out and experience the one-day program, you know, and kind of get the self-care from that. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like a family out here. So if someone's in our program, the family can come out and get to be around the horses too. We love that.
Right. And that, I think that's a good point there, because it sort of gives a shared experience with their loved one, their spouse, you know, or their family member, because you know, you've been apart for so long and you've missed out on a lot of those shared experiences. And so now if you can do this thing, you know, maybe not you're necessarily working right together, but you have something in common now that you can bring it home and talk about, as opposed to, the husband goes off and is doing this, you know, all day, and the wife is still back at home and everything. And, yeah. And that might cause some other stresses too in the family. But if they can come together and they can do this type of thing, that they have that shared experience, then that could also be beneficial, I would imagine. So,
so that's great. We had one couple come out to one of our Veterans Days as their date night. Except
okay.
Well, that's happened a few times, actually. That's happened a few times, but here in Kentucky, the very first vet event we did, there was a couple that came, and that was their purpose for it, is that was their date day.
Okay. Now, I know a lot of times when people think about horses, I think they're expensive and they're, you know, very, very costly. So what is this going to cost me is one of those things that's probably floating around in someone's head, you know, if they're listening to this. So, you know, what are the costs involved? And, you know, I know, you know, you have some, you know, working with veterans, you deal with that question probably quite a bit. So what does that look like for a veteran who's looking to come through this?
It's free.
And that's, I knew that answer, and I was going to, I wanted it to come from you though. You know, so that's what I want, you know, people to take away from this, is that this is something that's being offered for free. You know, take that and realize that, like, there's really no risk here. It's not like you have to go spend $1,000 on you know, any of this stuff, or you don't have to spend anything. It's free. You know, just get yourself there. And
maybe I'll add something else, is that we certify them, right? Okay. So they get to take away beginning, intermediate, advanced, or trainer level certification from this Groom Elite certification that's good across the country, right? If they want to, you know, come get trained in Kentucky and work in California, they can, you know.
So that's, I mean, that's great too, because that gives them the opportunity, you know, they don't have to relocate to Kentucky in order to, you know, find a job or anything. They can come out for whatever the time period is to learn what they need to do and get certified, and then they can take it back home and work closer to their loved ones and, you know, the people that they want to be around and everything. So
provided the horse industry exists where they are, that's all.
Right. Exactly. Yes. If you're in New York City, it's probably going to be a little bit harder to find a job than it would be in, you know, Kansas or, you know, somewhere else, you know, that's probably a little bit more open like that. So,
probably upstate New York, they have a lot.
I'm sure they do. Yeah. You know, but in the city, that's probably going to be a problem. But anyways, I mean, this has been really great information. If someone who's listening to this can take away, you know, a little bit of information, like one major thing, I would like to ask, like, who is the ideal candidate for, you know, coming through your program, you know, so that way, if someone who's listening to this can keep that in the back of their mind, to refer this to somebody, if they know of them, you know, if they know of them now or 6 months down the road, they learn of somebody who might be, you know, fitting this profile, if you will, you know, what does that ideal person look like who will get the most benefit out of this?
Okay, so for our day-long veteran events, they can be in virtually any condition, right? We have even non-ambulatory vets that come out and do our stuff for the day. As far as for the grooming certification and job placement program, they'll have to be ambulatory. They will want to be able to be physically able enough to lift stuff, you know, so they're going to be more able-bodied.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean they can't be, you know, have prosthetics, right? That's right. Absolutely fine. Mental health stuff is fine. Mm-hmm. I think probably the only mental health thing that we're not really equipped to deal with would be psychosis. But, you know, I mean, I know I'm getting a little psychological there, but
that's okay.
Yeah. Just, you know, pretty much anybody is okay.
And so, I mean, if it looks like, you know, from all the other stuff that we talked about today, if it seems like there's somebody who, you know, in your life for the listeners, if there's somebody in your life who could benefit from this, you know, definitely, you know, reach out to them. Recommend, hey, you know, there's this program out there, it's free, you know, there's really no risk to it, you know, other than you know, a little bit of time, you know, outside of that, you know, and if you're struggling, you know, it seems like give it a try, you know, it doesn't really seem like there's any downside to it here. So well, I mean, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, learning about all the things that you do and you know, how you're helping out veterans and their families. Where can people go to get in touch with you and find out more about horse sensing and all the different therapies and programs that you offer?
They can go to horsesensing.com. So it's all one word. And it's horse, horsesing.com, and then also our Facebook page. So it's at Horse Sensing, and we update really often about all the things that we're doing. They can call and ask too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will have links to all of this in the show notes for the show, to your social media, to your website, and the phone number and everything like that. I'll try to put all that in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to get in touch to check it out, to learn more about the horse therapy, I encourage you to go check it out and, you know, and really explore this as an option, because it could very well be very beneficial to you, especially if you've tried other things. You went to the VA and other places like that didn't seem to quite resonate with you. Don't throw in the towel and give up hope. All hope is lost here. There are other options, and that's why I have people on the show like Sally today to talk about the different options that are available, so that there is still hope for you, even if you've tried other things. So again, thank you for sharing all this information and your time today. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for letting me be on your show. Appreciate
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.